Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
It should be a state's issue, so I agree with the Supreme Court and had looked forward to this for years and years.
Special election candidates share their view on abortion. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Monday, June 27th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Thanks to Lori Townsend for filling in last week. Also tonight, Anchorage opens a public campground to homeless residents.
The feeling of like it's okay for us to be here, it's a good feeling.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Are you ready to start accelerating your child's future through education? The Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program is expanding its reach with new opportunities in Juneau and Southeast Alaska. With ANSEP's Acceleration Academy, high school students can earn college credit, save thousands of dollars in college costs, and experience fun, hands-on learning. ANSEP, it's a better way to learn. Learn more and enroll at ansep.net/acceleration. This message sponsored by ANSEP.
The three candidates vying to serve the remaining months of the late Congressman Don Young's term staked out their views on abortion at an Anchorage Chamber of Commerce forum today. For 50 years, Roe v. Wade prevented states from passing abortion bans. The U.S. Supreme Court overturned it Friday. Republican Sarah Palin, the former governor, railed against government intrusion and regulation generally. She said abortion is a matter for state governments to decide.
Faceless bureaucrats in some bubble far away, they're going to make decisions for us as individuals and as a state when it comes to an issue as important as abortion. No, it should be a state's issue. So I agree with the Supreme Court and had looked forward to this for years and years that finally the state, the people, through their representatives, their will be done.
Republican Nick Begich also spoke of abortion as a state's rights issue.
Under the 10th Amendment, any powers not specifically enumerated to the federal government are reserved for the states. We have a constitutional amendment process by which we may modify provisions related to this specific issue, but I think the court was correct in returning this issue to the states.
Democrat Mary Peltola is the only candidate left on the special election ballot who says the law should protect an individual's right to choose abortion.
Reproductive rights are as personal of an issue as you could possibly get. I do not believe this is one area. I do not believe the federal government, or for that matter, the state government, has say-so in your personal body.
A fourth candidate, Republican Tara Sweeney, was in the audience. She had hoped to be the fourth nominee on the special election ballot to replace Al Gross, who dropped out of the race last week with little explanation. But the state Supreme Court ruled Saturday that the law does not allow the substitution. Sweeney says she favors abortion rights and she remains a candidate for the regular election to decide who will serve the 2-year congressional term that begins in January. 9 other candidates in the regular U.S. House race withdrew before the dropout deadline, so only 22 names will appear on that primary ballot on August 16th. And August 16th is also the day of the special election. That's when Alaskans will have their first opportunity to engage in ranked choice voting as they choose among Begich, Palin, and Peltola. In the midst of a massive transition in Anchorage's emergency shelter system, the city on Friday abruptly opened a new option for homeless residents, a sanctioned public campground in East Anchorage. Local assembly members and community council members immediately decried the move, which they say was made without their input and didn't take into account an influx of people. But as Alaska Public Media's Lex Trinan reports, some homeless people are excited about the new option.
On Monday morning, the sun is filtering through the thick spruce trees at Centennial Park Campground. Angel and Jennifer Luna are at one of the dozens of gravel campsites here. They're sipping on sodas at a wooden picnic table in front of a small gray camping tent. Jennifer says they moved to this campground from an illegal site just a few hundred yards away over the weekend.
We heard from a friend that people were being able to be here for free because we don't have the funds to do it without it.
When they were illegally camping in the woods, Jennifer Luna says they constantly worried about police forcing them to leave or people stealing their things. But now, at the campground, they're registered at the front office, and there's regular security patrols, electricity for charging their phones, and showers. Angel Luna says it's a relief, and they hope it'll help them get back on their feet.
The feeling of, it's okay for us to be here, it's a good feeling.
The campground has 84 spots that each hold multiple people. It's normally a place where Alaskans and tourists camp and RV recreationally, but the city has canceled those reservations through the end of July. Several community leaders protested the decision. They say it was made without neighborhood input or even informing the local community council. City officials say opening a place for sanctioned camping was necessary to prevent forest fires in an unusually hot and dry summer after they cleared out a large illegal camp in the Mountain View neighborhood. Also, the campground could be another place for people to go when the Sullivan Arena shelter closes on Thursday and dozens of people are left without a place to stay. Some people staying at the Centennial Campground say it's the safest they've felt in years. Some advocates hope it will last.
We would like to see a long-term sanctioned camp.
Roger Branson is with the Houseless Resource Advocacy Council, a grassroots advocacy group for homeless people. His group proposed opening up Centennial for long-term houseless campers last year, but the pitch went nowhere at the time. Now that it's open, he hopes it will continue, though so far it's only been guaranteed for 2 weeks. That's not enough time to convince people like Brian Vaughn. He's staying at an illegal camp in the Mountain View neighborhood that city workers are trying to clear. He says he won't be going to Centennial, despite the promise of hot showers and security patrols, because there's no guarantee it'll last.
There's no answer to the problem at hand of a place to go. We'd be right back in the same situation here. We'd just be in Muldoon.
But others at his camp have started packing up to move to Centennial after hearing from friends about the conditions there. City, parks, and rec staff are helping transport and unload camper supplies at Centennial. Service providers are also making the rounds at Centennial, delivering meals and connecting with clients. Park safety head Mike Braniff says the camp seems to be catching on for people who are homeless and need a place to stay.
We had 4 people move over here on Friday. But Saturday and Sunday were both busier, and as I understand, at the end of the day yesterday, we had 28 occupied camp spaces.
Back at their picnic table, Angel and Jennifer Luna are finishing up their drinks. They say they'll spend the day biking around looking for jobs. Jennifer Luna says they're more comfortable than they've been in a while here at the campground, but it's not necessarily going to be enough to get them out of homelessness.
If we do find a job and it's not on this side of town with bicycles, how hard is it going to be for us to get back and forth and leaving our stuff just, you know, not in an apartment, it's in the woods.
With spots guaranteed for just a couple weeks, they're hoping to find a place before that time runs out. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Lex Trinan.
A helicopter working the clear fire in the Anderson area in interior Alaska crashed last night. State Forestry Fire Information Officer Sam Harrell says firefighters and Alaska State Troopers responded.
The Division of Forestry and Fire Protection confirms that there was a single pilot and no passengers on board at the time of the accident. The Alaska State Troopers and the National Transportation Safety Board are conducting an investigation of the crash.
Troopers identified the pilot killed as 56-year-old Douglas Ritchie of Wasilla. They say Ritchie was flying alone in a 1960 Bell 204B Huey helicopter operated by Northern Pioneer Helicopters. The Associated Press reports that Ritchie was in the process of sling-loading material out to the clear fire. He had brought the helicopter up to a hover when the crash occurred. An investigation into what happened is ongoing. The state had contracted with Northern Pioneer Helicopters to help with the clear fire. According to the company's website, Ritchie had been with the Big Lake-based charter operation for 12 years and was its lead pilot. The death was the first related to Alaska wildfires in 22 years, according to the AP. The clear fire grew to more than 9,500 acres over the weekend, and the Denali Borough issued a Level 3 go evacuation order Saturday for 3 subdivisions in its path. Harrell says work is underway to protect them.
They're building indirect dozer lines that if it should continue to grow towards the Kobe Ag subdivision and the Anderson subdivisions, it will be someplace where they'll have a line of defense established.
Schools in Nenana to the north and Healy to the south have been set up as evacuation sites for people fleeing the Clear Fire. Meanwhile, the Fairbanks North Star Borough issued an evacuation order last night for an area of the Chattanooga River Valley due to the growing Minto Lakes wildfire. It was started by lightning June 21st and had burned over 9,000 acres as of yesterday. There were 16 new wildfires in Alaska over the weekend. Harrell says the weather outlook is for continued high pressure over much of the interior this week.
But unfortunately, this long extended drying period is going to be followed by another wave of thunderstorms.
Harrell says that, combined with a very dry forest duff layer, is a recipe for more wildfires. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the University of Alaska Southeast will offer free Alaska Native language classes.
I think it's going to be medicinal. It's going to alter the course of the way things are going, and it's really exciting.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Invasive plants and animals threaten Alaska's waters and can spread to new locations by hitching a ride. Anyone can help stop aquatic hitchhikers by remembering to clean boots, boats, and trailer to remove plants, animals, and mud. Drain bilge, ballast, and buckets before leaving the area, and dry equipment before using it in a new body of water. Learn more at stopaquatichitchhikers.org. This message sponsored by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
A fire that burned 13 acres in East Anchorage last week is now 100% contained and controlled, according to the Alaska Division of Forestry. But there's still work to do in the wooded area near Campbell Park. Today, a 20-person hotshot crew and three Division of Forestry firefighters continued mopping up and checking that logs and stumps have cooled. They also searched the surrounding area to make sure there were no small fires nearby. The division will wait several days before calling the fire officially out, said spokesperson Mike McMillan.
It was a good effort by both the state and the city firefighters to come together and stop it. And, you know, there are no injuries reported, so it was a successful operation all the way around.
The lack of gusty winds through the weekend also helped, but the weather forecast calls for higher temperatures in the 70s in Anchorage this week, possibly the mid-80s on Wednesday. McMillan said he's hopeful winds will stay low as cleanup in East Anchorage continues.
We don't expect high winds. However, the warm temperatures are always a concern when people are recreating.
Officials suspect the fire was human-caused since there wasn't lightning in the area when it ignited last Thursday. A burn ban for Anchorage was lifted weeks ago, but open fires on the ground, including campfires and burn pits, are still not allowed. Anchorage residents can use outdoor fireplaces as long as they have a screen on top and legs that lift them off the ground and are 15 feet away from anything that could catch on fire. Electric, gas, and charcoal barbecue grills are also allowed. In the Matanuska-Susitna Borough, burn barrels, debris piles, or lawn burns are not allowed. Campfires are allowed if they're smaller than 3 feet in diameter, but McMillan said that could change.
Although we're still allowing campfires in this area, that would change if the wind picked up or if we had new fire starts. So we just ask the public to be really diligent.
He said people burning campfires in the Mat-Su should remain cautious as fire danger persists throughout the state. A federal court ruled that the state of Alaska cannot issue gillnet openers for all Alaskans in the federal areas of the Kuskokwim River, at least for now. That will be the job of the federal government. As KYUK's Olivia Eberts reports, a local tribal group requested the order favoring federal management following disagreements between state and federal managers.
The court order follows years of low Chinook and Chum salmon runs on the Kuskokwim River and in the broader region. A U.S. District Court ruled Thursday to temporarily bar the Alaska Department of Fish and Game from announcing conflicting salmon openers on the Kuskokwim River's federal waters. The state's openers allow all Alaskans to fish the Kuskokwim, but the feds only allow fishing by qualified subsistence users. The Kuskokwim River Intertribal Fish Commission requested the order against ADF&G. The Fish Commission Commission says the state's openers violate the Alaska National Interest Lands Conservation Act, or ANILCA. ANILCA gives preference to rural subsistence users to fish, and fishing has been difficult for subsistence users. Chinook numbers on the river have been on a downward trend for years, and Chum numbers are starting to crash too. Wichluk-born Harry Alexi says the absence of fish is deeply felt.
I grew up with abundance of fish. If we did a one set, we could fill up a boat in my younger years, and that's not common today. I'm feeling for my kids, for their generation, in which they were not able to experience what we experience.
Alexi says he likes the federal government's conservation-based approach. He also likes that the feds co-manage the river with tribes, whereas the state does not.
In my opinion, you know, the state should be consulting with tribes also. Get the numbers and expertise from the people who are living on the land and water.
The temporary order against ADF&G is part of an ongoing lawsuit the federal government filed against the state of Alaska over the same issue. The order will expire when the lawsuit's resolved. The lawsuit and temporary order are both a result of a conflict that began last year when the state announced openings against the wishes of the Intertribal Fish Commission. At first, the state only announced openings on the same days that the feds had. The only difference between the openers was that the state allowed all Alaskans to fish. The conflict came to a head last year when the state announced an opening on a day the feds closed the river. The Kuskokwim River Intertribal Fish Commission said in its oral arguments that that created confusion on the river, and the court agreed in issuing its decision. Attorneys representing the Alaska Department of Fish and Game argued that opening the river to all Alaskans allow people who have moved away from the region to come back and fish, and Warren Nikolai from Nebuskiak agrees that should be allowed.
Most of those folks that are wanting to come in are those types of people that are holding on to their ancestral practice.
The federal government said they would not comment on pending litigation. The state of Alaska Department of Law did not respond to a request for comments by deadline. In Bethel, I'm Olivia Eberts.
A Norwegian cruise line ship hit an iceberg on Saturday. The Norwegian Sun was in port in Juneau today while divers assessed the damage. It left in the afternoon, scheduled to stop next in Ketchikan, but officials would not confirm if the ship would keep to its schedule after the incident. KTOO's Claire Strempel reports.
A spokesperson for Norwegian Cruise Line said the ship was engulfed by dense fog, limiting visibility, when it hit an iceberg near Havard Glacier. They say it was a growler. That's a small iceberg about the size of a grand piano.
The ship had a severe judder.
Passenger Jason Newman of Atlanta, Georgia, said the fog had cleared when he felt the impact.
You could feel the strike, and then it lifted minorly. I mean, I wouldn't say it rolled heavily, but, you know, there was definitely indication of an impact.
Newman said the ship limped out of the bay and all the way to Juneau at 10 miles per hour. He tracked their speed using a phone app. The ship skipped its scheduled Skagway stop the next day and reached Juneau on Sunday night at around 5 p.m. He said passengers did not hear from the captain until the morning after the strike, when he confirmed the ship had struck an iceberg. Newman says passengers were allowed a 5-hour shore leave Sunday night in Juneau, but were confined to the ship on Monday. He had planned a Jeep tour in the morning, but...
And they told us that it was delayed, that they couldn't get the authority to approve us to leave the ship. They'd canceled the entire tours for everybody on board.
Newman said tour buses that had lined up that morning to take passengers on shore excursions all left empty. On Monday afternoon, the cruise ship was moored at the Franklin Street dock in Juneau, where Coast Guard divers were assessing the damage. Petty Officer Lexi Preston with Coast Guard Public Affairs said after the assessment, it will be up to Cruise Lines agencies of Alaska to determine what will happen next. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Claire Strempel.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The IBEW is the union of skilled hands and generous hearts, hardworking people on the job and off. It's the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, the IBEW. This message sponsored by the IBEW Local 1547.
Are you ready to start accelerating your child's future through education? The Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program is expanding its reach with new opportunities in Juneau and Southeast Alaska. With ANSEP's Acceleration Academy, high school students can earn college credit, save thousands of dollars in college costs, and experience fun, hands-on learning. ANSEP, it's a better way to learn. Learn more and enroll at ansep.net/acceleration. This message sponsored by ANSEP.
Governor Mike Dunleavy has named the head of the state's Environmental Protection Agency as the person second in the state's line of succession. In a memo last week, Dunleavy designated Jason Bruni, commissioner of the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation, the replacement for Lieutenant Governor Kevin Meyer if Meyer is unable to perform his job. The memo arrived 10 days before Michael Johnson, commissioner of the Alaska Department of Education and Early Development, is set to leave his job. Johnson is the state's current number three officer. The role of designated successor comes with no additional power or authority, but Bruni could become governor if both the governor and lieutenant governor are incapacitated or otherwise unable to perform their jobs. In that case, he would serve as acting governor until a special election is held. Bruni's designation is subject to legislative confirmation if Dunleavy is reelected and Bruni stays the designated successor. If Dunleavy loses re-election this fall, the newly elected governor would name a new number three official. The University of Alaska Southeast will offer a free option for Alaska Native language classes starting in the fall semester. Hune Lance Twitchell is a professor of Alaska Native languages at UAS. He says this is part of bringing the Tlingit, Haida, and Tsimshian languages to a safer place by having more speakers.
I think it's going to be medicinal. It's going to alter the course of the way things are going, and it's really exciting.
There has been a decline in Alaska Native languages over the last 100 years due to genocide and assimilation. Many elders who were birth speakers died during the COVID-19 pandemic. But Twitchell says there has also been a shift in the last decade toward language revitalization. For example, Outer Coast and Sitka offered a free year of Tlingit courses during the pandemic. Twitchell says 600 people signed up.
We didn't put ourselves in this situation. Our language was banished. It was prohibited. It was made illegal. We were tortured and abused and all kinds of things to get us to stop speaking. So why should we have to pay to learn our own language?
Arts and Sciences Dean Karin Silkatis says one of their main jobs is to support faculty and find ways to say yes.
You have to open doors. You have to bring seats to tables. And I think the way to do that is to create more access. And I think creating free curriculum is a way to create more access for people.
Dean Silkatis says the free classes are made possible with help from Sea Alaska Heritage Foundation and a Language Pathways grant. Students who select the free option won't earn credits or receive a grade. Anglers on the Russian River will soon be able to catch up to 6 sockeye salmon a day and be in possession of 12 per an emergency order from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. That's an increase from the current bag limit of 3 sockeye and possession limit of 6. When more fish than expected arrive in the river and the run looks like it will hit its escapement goals, the bag and possession limits for sockeye salmon may be increased, says Colton Lipka, area management biologist for Fish and Game. He says this week the escapement numbers are exceeding expectations.
So we increased the bag limits when our projections indicate that we won't have any issues achieving the escapement goal. And right now our projection actually indicates that we will go over the upper bound of our escapement goal. We upped the bag limits to give folks more opportunity to take fish home.
According to Fish and Game, as of Wednesday, more than 17,000 sockeye had passed through the weir upriver. Lipka cautions anglers about the specifics of the new regulations, which only allow the increased bag and possession limits in the Russian River Sanctuary Area, and Skelak Lake, nowhere else in the region.
You have to be aware of your possession limits because you cannot fish in waters where you have over your possession limit. So if you did go up and you get more than 6, and then you wanted to go fish the main stem kenai for sockeye, you couldn't do that because you have more than the possession limit in the main stem lower river allows.
If the bag limit is 3 in one area and 6 in another, Lipka also warns that doesn't mean someone can possess 9 salmon at one time. The catch and possession limit change went into effect Saturday and will be in place until July 14th. Well, the Alaska Sea Life Center in Seward admitted two abandoned harbor seal pups earlier this month after they were found on a beach in the Kasilof area. Now, in the center's care, the pups are growing and eating for the first time, and vets hope to release them back to the ocean soon. KBBI's Hope McKinney reports.
The wildlife response team at the Sea Life Center in Seward got a call in early June from a fisherman who spotted a skinny baby harbor seal on the beach.
Well, it just so happens while he was talking to us about that pup, another pup came out of the water nearby.
Jane Belaverick is the wildlife response curator at the center, which rescues and rehabilitates marine mammals like harbor seals. She says photos of the two pups showed they were extremely skinny and still had their umbilical cords attached. And because there was no adult seal around, the center went ahead and got authorization from NOAA to bring the newborn pups into the rehab center for care.
I'd say 95% of the time, we never know what happens to mom when we have a pup that's by itself. We try to give a certain amount of time, depending on the species, for the mom to reunite with the pup. But sometimes if there's danger to the pup or there's danger of public interacting with the pup and the pup definitely needs help, we'll bring it in. But ideally, we try to give time for the pup to reunite with its mom.
Belaverick says that's because often as pups get older, seal moms might leave them on the beach or in the water to go hunting before coming back for them.
So that's why when we have people who say that they have an animal on the beach and we establish that it's a baby, one of the first questions we ask are there any adults in the area? Is there interference going on?
In this case, she says, the first pup, a female who appeared to be just a couple days old, was too skinny, indicating she hadn't been fed by her mother. And the second one, a male, was brand new and didn't have an adult in sight. There are a number of reasons they could have been abandoned, she says. The pups could have been separated from their moms or something could have happened to them. Or, she says, the moms could have been young or sick and unable to take care of the babies.
Most of the time, we never know what was the circumstances that caused the animals to be separated from their mom.
Belaverick says harbor seals are common in South Central Alaska, particularly when the salmon start to run. People often see them from the beach or when they're kayaking. She says harbor seals start to pup in May, and these are the first seals the Sea Life Center has brought in this year. But Belaverick says it's hard to say how many more abandoned pups they might get.
Some seasons in rehab, we've only had like 2 seals, and other seasons we've had like 16 seals. So it's definitely common for us to get at least a couple orphans every year, but how many we get is just the luck of the draw.
She says the Sea Life Center plans to release the two baby harbor seals back into the ocean, but they first have to meet certain weight and maturity requirements from NOAA. She says these two are off to a good start at just a few weeks old, with the male pup having eaten his first fish all on his own this week.
And so usually by the end of the summer, they meet all those milestones and we can let them go back into their home in the ocean.
For now, they're in 2 separate pools at the Sea Life Center. But Belaverick says they'll soon be in a pool together where they'll learn to compete and hunt for fish. Reporting in Homer, I'm Hope McKinney.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin and Lex Trinan in Anchorage, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Olivia Eberts in Bethel, Claire Strempel in Juneau, Sabine Pooks in Kenai, and Hope McKinney in Homer. And again, thanks to Lori Townsend for filling in last week. Our audio engineer is Tobin Shelby, Katie Anastas is our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, celebrating 45 years of Alaska operations. Learn more at alyeskapipeline.com.
From one end of Alaska to the other and everywhere in between, public media works to provide quality programming and statewide news you can count on and news you can trust. Whether you're listening at home, at work, or in the car, we're grateful to be a part of your day. Thank you for tuning in. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.